Thursday, the 14th of March, 1 o'clock on the East Coast. Thursdays are a busy market call day.
Yeah.
Very busy. You know why?
Yeah.
Because Thursdays, we have the great Carter Braxton Worth.
Correct.
And if it's Thursday,
it's Butters.
Bitch. Yes, it is. And John Butters will be with us.
In the flesh.
I didn't even let
Not
you do it.
Not in the flesh. Not in the IRL. He's going to be with us on the show.
Yeah,
usually we preview his earnings insight blog.
We do that.
But he's going to join us today.
We don't have to preview it. He'll do it for us.
Yes, which is
He's coming from some studio in Michigan. I'm looking forward to that. Let's go. Oh, by the way, the Rangers play tonight.
I know, but wait, first things first. Before we just kind of rush this thing for a second here, Guy, because Guy Adami comes alive a little bit today on Thursday, because you found yourself where last night?
Well, okay, if you want to go down this
road. Yeah, I do, really quickly.
So in 1976, yeah. I believe, if memory serves,
yeah.
Peter Frampton's Frampton Comes Alive yes. album, and it's, I think to this day, it's the largest selling live album of all time.
Correct.
I believe this.
Correct.
He played last night in the Morristown Performing Arts Center.
Amazing.
And 74
you found
years
there.
Old. Yes.
All knotted up.
Yeah, of course.
Were you the only guy, maybe other than maybe a security guy?
No, I was
like
probably
that?
The only one with a tie.
And you were like the youngest guy there, too.
One of the youngest people
That's
there.
Amazing.
But I got to tell you something. He still has chops.
That's awesome.
I mean, he can still play. He has to sit down when he plays a guitar.
Yeah.
He's got some degenerative muscle disease. But
oh,
the
right.
guy, yeah,
Man.
Voice was
it's
great.
Honestly, all the power to him, because the fact
yeah.
is that he is obviously struggling physically to do that, but making people like you happy,
Always.
I think is absolutely amazing.
Peter, I mean, I don't know if Amanda can, during the show at some point,
she'll
pull up
it.
That epic picture
she'll
of Peter Frampton with
she'll
the hair.
It.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. He also learned, I believe, yesterday, that he's been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Amazing.
He should be
in. He should have already been in there.
Oh, but it's criminal that he's not.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
All right, let's get to
it. Let's go right to the rundown.
You know, Guy, I feel like we've been saying this a lot over the last few days on Market Call. Interesting market day.
Today.
Yes.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
Today certainly is.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a chart check on tech. Not easy to say.
Nope.
Dan's got a triple Q trade.
Yeah, I do.
Which we're going to sort of be, we're going to do it clean.
NASDAQ
it's going to be
100.
Fun. Sure.
The ETF
attraction. Adobe after the bell. By the way, I like putting my Adobe on sort of my rice and stuff. It's a Goya product, and it's funny. They're a tech company as well.
The worst dad joke ever, but that's fine.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And John Butters is here, as we said, with his earnings insight.
All right.
So let's go right. Let's just get right into it, because today is an interesting day.
No, it is. And again, we've been talking about how, you know, I think you were saying that, you know, Apple had been used as a source mm-hmm. of funds, as had Google to some degree. And there were some fundamental reasons tied to both of those names, obviously Tesla too. But the semi trade kept on working. Okay, so the semi trade is kind of coming undone today, but Apple's green, Microsoft's green, Google's green. Interesting to me, in a word. Okay, so let's see at some point if we see correlations kind of go back to one. It'll probably take some sort of fundamental event, Guy, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Maybe it's a guy down or something like that from one of these companies. Next week is this huge user conference for NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're going to give a little bit of an investor update. And I think that could serve as a little bit of a catalyst. But Guy, not too different that into the Feb 21 earnings event for NVIDIA, the stock sold off into it. And the sentiment was getting a little nervous, but it rallied out of it.
And the knee-jerk reaction right after earnings, not that it matters, but if you recall, they actually sold it off for about 30 seconds.
It was down low 10%.
No, I know. And then it's boom, off to the races. Anyway, before we get to your trade, as we outlined, we have a triple Q's chart, and then we're going to bring Carter in, and then we're going to look at his charts. And they're going to look eerily similar, but here you go. So again, that uptrend we've been drawing for a while. You see the moving average has been sloping up, which is a great thing. You see past basically resistance levels, past resistance becomes support. We'll see. I mean, we are precariously close to breaking that, and that's sort of a tease onto your trade, Dan. But that's the chart that we've drawn.
Yeah. Now, I mean, listen, to me, one of the reasons why, you know, we wanted to focus on the NASDAQ 100 here is that, you know, it seemed like a month ago, you know, the Magnificent Seven was just the talk of the town, and it had been the case for, you know, a year or so. But as we started losing some of them, Tesla obviously was the first one to go, Google and the underperformance there, Apple, the underperformance there. It's just kind of interesting. Microsoft is firmly the number one holding in the QQQ right now, very near 9%. Apple is 7.5% or so, and NVIDIA is about 6.5%. So I just think it's interesting to kind of like look at the performance of some of these largest components. Yet, you know, the thing is you know, stuck very near its all-time high.
I didn't bring up you brought up Magnificent Seven.
I did.
I didn't. I just want to be crystal freaking clear.
It's okay. Fab Four.
So if you recall the movie 1960, we've talked about this before.
You have.
I mean, it's a lit. It's a who's who of actors and actresses, but mostly actors.
The West.
Eli Wallach played the bad guy, and Butters is listening to this. He's nodding his head. He knows.
Yep.
Okay. Steve McQueen, by the way, every movie Steve McQueen was in, much like Robert Shaw, steals the movie.
Yep.
Yul Brynner plays sort of the, he is the protagonist. He's the guy, he's a good guy, right? He's the guy that comes in, puts the seven together. You with me so far?
Correct.
Then Robert Vaughn is in that, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Remember Robert Vaughn and The Man from, Charles Bronson is in that. You remember this?
Yep.
You with me so far?
Correct.
James Coburn is in this. He's the guy with the knife.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting about that, they are introducing for the first time ever a guy named Horst Buchholz.
Don't know.
I know you don't.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point. Because in The Magnificent Seven, if you recall, a bunch of these cats die and only left with three. Horst Buchholz makes it, but you never hear from him again. And that, to me, is sort of NVIDIA.
Never.
And I'm just letting you know.
Well, fair
that's
enough.
How I'm putting this all together.
That
took a while, but I got
not,
there.
Yeah, it's not where I thought you were
I gotta
going.
Tell you, hold on a second. You people out there, zero had Horst Buchholz on their bingo card.
Matter of fact. All right, let's do it. Let's bring in Carter Braxtonworth of Worth Charting here. Carter, welcome back.
How are you?
All right, sir, let's just do this. I'm going to throw up my chart on the QQQ. We just talked a little bit about the components. We talked about some of the dispersion from some of the largest names. You see my lines. They're really simple. It's that uptrend from that 200-day moving average. I know you like to look at 150-day moving average. That uptrend's getting steep. You see that kind of support zone that we talked about. It was a breakout level from a couple months ago. Obviously, to me, that 400 is a nice round number to the downside. By the time it probably gets there, if it does get there in the next few weeks, that rising 200-day might be there. That might be a great support level. Carter, walk us through how you're thinking about the NASDAQ 100 through the lens of the QQQ, the ETF that tracks it.
Sure. So it's all about, for not only this ETF, but all equities, all indices, the October low to the current level. So this intermediate advance, October to March, or soon to be April, plus months in the making. And we know that the QQQ has advanced 36% from its low of October versus the S&P, where it's, 26%. So, or maybe it's 31, but let's look at my charts if we can, and we can try to zero in here. So we're going to toggle. This is logarithmic. Let's do arithmetic. We'll go back and forth. There are very slight difference on the log scale. We're flirting with and are slightly below the trend line in effect since the October low. Remember, JP Morgan has that same low on October. So does Wingstop. So does ITB, all housing stocks and so forth. Everything's ascended since then. And we are on trend. Now, if you go to the arithmetic, we are literally on trend. So the question is, are we in the process of perhaps breaking this intermediate uptrend line that's been in effect for now five some months? That's my hunch. And the question is, you know, downside, we could go back to a longer term chart or the one you had on there. There really isn't any support to speak of. And so do you come all the way down to the highs of the summer? That is certainly a prospect. But what we know is, more importantly, that the aggregate, the QQQ, is masking the performance of the underlying components, right? So we have the bifurcation that's getting more extreme. Apple is not well. Tesla is not well. And yet things like, of course, Meta and Amazon and so forth continue to streak higher. NVIDIA. And so put them all together and you have this very, maybe back to the short-term charts, we have this very sort of not benign, but very orderly intermediate advance. But again, by virtue of it being up 32%, it seems to me that, and we know this, that uptrends are characterized by, punctuated by, counter trend moves. And so we've had very little in the way of givebacks. I would think at a minimum, it's 420 in the case of the Qs, and then prospectively lower from there.
You also brought with you a chart that examines the move in the S&P, the spider, and the triple Qs.
Correct.
And it's remarkable. I mean, this, you don't often see this, but you're seeing it right now in terms of I mean, basically tick for tick, Carter. So speak to the importance of this.
Right. And the point of including this was if we were doing the bingo exercise or that you mentioned, Guy, often, or anything, if you just gave this, frankly, just did a little one-question survey to the 100 largest hedge fund managers. Are the Qs outperforming the SPYs over the past 3 years? Oh, yeah, for sure. I think you'd get 85 to 95% saying yes. And the reality is no. So not only is it no, they've underperformed dramatically. And you could say, what do you mean they've underperformed? The lines are the same. Look at the percent change. But it's all about alpha. If from the peak, the green line, S&P dropped 27%, but the blue line dropped 37%, while their start to finish are identical, if one has a drawdown so much more substantial than the other, then on a risk-adjusted basis, the performance of the SPY handily outdoes that of the Qs, despite being even money. And so it's a myth out there that tech or Qs or what have you have been so much better than the market, because these lines are not my lines. These are the lines, and they are identical.
Yeah, and this is why I want to focus on the QQQ. The top 10 holdings make up about 50% of the weight of that. Those same 10 names make up maybe 30% or so of the S&P 500, which is an index of 500 stocks. So to me, if I want to kind of look down on one of the major indices, and I think that the largest components of those indices are going to lead the way, that's why I want to focus on the QQQ here. I want to play for a 10% pullback between, let's say, now and May expiration. That's about 2 months or so. I think, you know, using options to define my risk makes some sense here. I want to pull up the chart of implied volatility in the QQQ. Obviously, there's not the idiosyncratic risk of a single name here. So you're seeing in a low vol environment, you know, we just talked about how it's just grinded higher, the underlying ETF or so, you're not going to see high implied volatility, the price of options. So they still look kind of reasonable here. If we were to kind of throw that up against historical vol, how much the underlying has been moving, they're basically in lockstep. So what that says to me is making a defined risk directional sort of view makes sense using long premium, meaning buying options here. So I want to look at May expiration. I want to look at a put spread. I want to buy the 440, 400 put spread. Cost me about $9. Buying one of the May 440 puts at about $12. Selling one of the May 400 puts at about $3. My max premium outlay is $9. I break even down at 431. That's about 2%. And I have gains of up to $31 between 431 and 400 with a max gain below that. And so I just like the risk reward here. I mean, one of the things that and Guy and I always talk about when using options on a directional sort of basis, you know, if let's say the QQQ goes sideways or goes higher, then the premium is going to go away. It's going to decay, right? And so I want to stop this on the upside if it doesn't go in my direction at about a 50% premium stop, or, you know, that's about a little more than, let's call it 1% or so. That's what I'm risking here, to have this downside exposure. And I like that. Now, I know that Guy will probably say, well, maybe you want to leg into this one, maybe not turn into a spread right out of the gate. One of the reasons why when we talk about some of these trade ideas, we like the idea of spreads, because I think it's easy for a lot of folks who don't stare at option chains the way we do quite frequently, or don't stare at charts the way we do, to kind of help parameterize what the risk and the reward is. So to me, you can either leg into it, you can think about it as a spread. The idea though is if it were to just kind of move quickly lower to that $400 level, move through it, you're going to be mighty disappointed that you sold that downside put for less than 1% of the premium. So Guy, talk to me about what the range in which I'm targeting here.
So I think your range is right, and I like the construction of this ETF. I mean, if you look at it, and you know, you can pull up the top 10 holdings, what I find fascinating is a lot of the names you would think would be find themselves in. Microsoft, I think, is the number one, close to 9%, Apple, NVIDIA, Amazon. But number seven on that list is Costco, which is, I think, fascinating. Then you go farther down the list, you see Pepsi's and Netflix and that type of thing. So you get a wide swath of companies here. And I think Amanda just pulled it up.
Yeah.
Your levels, I think, are right. Now, you mentioned legging in. And again, that's sort of next level stuff. But for the here and now, I think the levels are right. And I think the trade is right. And look, you understand what you're risking. You always say at 50%. So in this case, $4.50 or so, you're going to be out, which is fine. But if we're on this trend line, if we're about to violate it, things are going to start to move pretty quickly. So I do like this trade a lot.
Yeah, and the other way that I would think about this is maybe kind of buying that 440 put with the ETF trade around 440. And if you do get a quick move, let's say lower over the next couple of days, then you would look to sell a downside put. You might even sell like the 395 or something like that. Okay, so thank you, Carter, on the QQQ charts. Guy, on your analysis on the trade structure and fundamentally. Guys, you got to just take a look at this chart right here because it's one that I mentioned over the last couple of weeks I thought might be the next stock in this Mag 7 on its way to Fab 4 that might show a little bit of weakness. I couldn't be more wrong. It's Microsoft. Let's pull up a one-year chart. Look at it in a tape like today. I think there was a positive mention, Guy, about Copilot for security and yada, yada. So we're going to keep seeing all of these sorts of headlines. That's a multi-year chart. Let's pull up the one-year for a second here because I think the one-year, first and foremost, is kind of interesting to me, Carter, and maybe we can get your two cents on it. We've had this kind of move from that consolidation a month and a half ago. You see what's going on here, and then you get a breakout. It's a beautiful breakout. You know, it's not too different than the one we saw after that prior consolidation. It's held that uptrend over the last, you know, few months or so from that October low. You see the rising 200-day there, which is basically at that prior consolidation period. I mean, this is about as good as it gets. Carter, thoughts on this, and I'm not saying as good as it gets, like I want to buy it because my macro view is kind of at odds with what this chart is telling me, but this is also now the largest equity in the entire stock market.
Sure. So again, it's about the sequence, the same October low, same ascent to the present level. But just to put it in perspective, this stock is up about 38% from its October low, the QQQ up 31.2, and the SPY is up 26. And so is there anything wrong with this? No, it's what an uptrend is. And it has nice pauses, the pauses that refresh, and now making a slight new high. One thing to point out is that the nature of bifurcation, when you start to have certain stocks lose their way, Apple or Tesla, or you pick others, Google's been under some pressure, the reciprocal of that is that people then go into ones that are deemed safer, right? And one could arguably say that Microsoft is safer than Tesla, or Microsoft is safer than Apple in many ways. Microsoft is almost a utility. It's a tool. You want to do business and you want to have a computer in your office, you got to pay Microsoft, essentially. I think Apple's share of the computer market is still like 17% or something. So interestingly, this is maybe the sort of most marquee stock, the most established, the most safe. And yet, to some extent, you do get the other side of that when everyone's believing in something as being impervious, safe, bulletproof. Is it time to maybe reduce one's exposure? At a minimum, I would sell calls.
Yeah, I can't speak to the premium getting paid, but it's probably the right, especially if you're long stock. I mean, this, it's gotten itself back to about 31 times next year's numbers, which, again, you might be comfortable with. I mean, maybe that's the norm now in terms of some of these companies. I get it, but I will tell you, on a historical basis, that's expensive for Microsoft. I think they report on April 23rd or thereabouts. Dan mentioned some of the news. I think there's also rumors out there about them and TikTok that's been out there before. I don't know if that's that, but I'll tell you, I think one of the main reasons you're seeing it higher today is because it's become a flight to safety, the same way the bond market historically has been. And when you see some of these semi names underperform, I think the money is finding itself into the aforementioned Microsoft and to a certain extent Apple, which we've talked about ad nauseum, Dan.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at another software name, and this is Adobe. And this is one that has not been making new highs every day. It's down about 5% or so in the year. Reports after the close tonight, maybe 7.5% implied move in either direction. Guy, and I've been talking about this one a little bit for a whole host of reasons. But again, just look at that kind of relative underperformance to many of its kind of peers in the SaaS space, but then obviously also to the QQQ, which we just spent some time on. If we want to pull that out to a five-year chart, you see that it never recouped. It never got back to its prior all-time high. Guy, thoughts here into the print? Obviously, you know, expectations, sentiment seems to be kind of poor at the moment here, you know, but fundamentally, you know, this is one where, I don't know, maybe on a valuation basis, maybe they're positioning as far as like generative AI and some of the products that we already know have been in their pipeline. There's a company that's been working, you know, on machine learning and Gen AI for a while here. It's definitely been added to the name of beneficiaries as we go. There is one thing that the company that we use to kind of create a lot of our graphics here, it's called Canva, which is a big competitor. It's in the private markets. I know that's gearing up to go public at some point. And I think lots of tech investors are very focused on Canva also.
Yeah, as they should be. And I look at this just on a, as a chart, and Carter can opine, but the fact that we've again traded down, held the moving average is clearly sloping higher. I mean, the fact that we have not gotten back, I think the all-time high in the stock was 700-ish in the fall of 2021, like many stocks. You saw the sell-off, you saw the... So you can look at it one of two ways. We have room to go and to recapture that prior high, or it's been underperforming the broader market, to your earlier point. I think the fact that we're holding the moving average is encouraging, but I will tell you, having sat in a seat many times for Adobe, they're renowned for coming out, reporting earnings, and the stock selling off in a meaningful way, only a week or so later seeing it make new all-time highs. Obviously, like many things, that changed in 2021 or so, but that's been sort of the, that's been the playbook for Adobe. So if it sells off in a violent way, it wouldn't surprise me. With that said, if it happens and you sort of fill that tiny little gap in that chart, Dan, that you can see, maybe that's a good entry point on the long side.
Yeah, and Carter, you know, like earlier in the week, we saw Oracle, and that was probably a much easier name, in my opinion, to be a bit negative on just from a fundamental standpoint, but it had that big gap higher, and it's held a bit of those gains. Adobe, you know, on the flip side, you know, it's one that trades at a different kind of valuation, you know, kind of metric there. And so just thoughts here, because again, like the way this market has been moving, I mean, a company of this size, it could easily move 10%, you know, higher or lower here, which it's kind of scary when you think about it. It seems like, you know, investors are shooting first, asking questions later to the downside, and then they don't see a downtick all day long if there is just the slightest bit of good news that outperforms expectations.
Yeah, sure. Well, since we've got Oracle on the screen, we can talk about this first. The first thing is remember, think about where it went to. Do you think, does anyone think that it went precisely to the penny, to those former highs, because that's a PE level, an enterprise value EBITDA level, a price to book, a price to sell? No, it's all about the chart, 100% about the chart. It goes to former levels because that's where people have traded shares before. Shares have changed hands, and prior levels are levels where people then rethink what they did before or what they wanted to do and never did. It's what supply is all about. But moving on to Adobe, which of course is the subject of the day, it's, if one didn't know it had earnings, one wouldn't even bother. Right. So that it's because it has earnings, and that makes it topical and maybe something where one could really make a hit if they get it right. It's coin flip, or lose a lot if they get it wrong. But all those things held aside, there's nothing about the pattern that would say, hey, we've got to really zero in on this. We've got to do some work. We need to get long. Yeah. Or conversely, wow, this is rolling over. It's in trouble. This is a textbook short. It's neither. And so at least by my work, right, the blue arrow is warranted. The blue arrow is what is, hey, there are expressions for this called jump ball. It's called anybody's guess. Or what I like is pair of twos.
Which is better than 2-7 offsuit. By the way, you know, and I think that's exactly right. So my point is, if you were to fill that little gap in the chart on the downside, which is, you know, if I had to go back and look, Carter can see, probably in the fall or something of whatever, you can see it. I can't make it out from this far away. That would be an interesting entry point. And if you pull up a quick Oracle chart, longer term, you'll see the levels that Carter's talking about. I mean, this 126 level or so is effectively where we topped out in June, I want to say, of 2023. So effectively last summer, and you can see it as clear as day right there. So this one actually concerns me a little bit, because you created this potential for a gap reversal. We'll see how it trades next week when we come back. Anyway, that's my two cents.
All right, Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting, thank you so much for joining us, doing a little chart on the tech. We appreciate that. Bye. See you soon, buddy. All right, Guy, before we get to the man, the myth, the legend, that would be John Butters. Let's quickly look at this. We tease this on our Insta. By the way, every morning, Guy and I, right after the opening, we do a little, our team puts a little Instagram post. You can follow us at Risk Rehearsal Media. Oh, there it is. And Guy is Guy.Adami. I'm Dan's Nathan. We kind of tease a little something that we're going to be talking about here. We have a couple of those things. At the end of this session, but I just really wanted to quickly hit while we're still on tech here, Guy. Let's look at the Tesla here. And we kind of highlighted that this morning on the post relative to the S&P 500. It's just been an abomination. November 16th, 2020, you see where that horizontal green line was. That's when it was announced by the S&P that it was going to be going into the S&P 500. You see what happened. The stock rallied like $100 in the next couple. It was basically at $150. I heard you last night on CNBC's Fast Money talking about 150 is probably exactly where it goes next. It seems to be on its way there. And who knows what sort of happens. Again, you and I know this, and we talk about this all the time when it comes to trading. Pressing a short when the sentiment is as bad as it, that's a tough place to be. We're just highlighting it right now and looking at some of the levels. If it is going to find some support, it better do it at 150. It doesn't look like a great short to me here, Guy, because the more negative people get on it, the greater the likelihood is that some sort of announcement, whatever the heck it might be, is the thing that causes it to rally in your face 15%.
Yeah. Well, the January 2023 low, I mean, that's the ultimate retest. It's 113 or so. And again, that move from 113 to 300 looked epic, and it was epic. I mean, that's a percentage huge move, but all it basically did was, you know, get us back to a downtrend line. And we've been steadfast on this. And quickly, because I don't care one way or another about Tesla. I really don't. I have no view one way about Elon Musk, but there's no denying that this stock specifically has vastly underperformed a broader market, which is effectively at all-time highs. And this stock is now 60% or so off its all-time high.
Well, we have a chart really quickly. So just the S&P versus Tesla. If you look at it, you know, again, you know, S&P is almost back to where it was on November 16, 2020. The S&P 500 was just below 3,600. Here we are in and around 5,100. You can do that map. So it's been an absolute train wreck. All right, Guy, it's time.
Bring him in, because I'm not, because when we do it correctly, I want to be.
Let's do it. So here, every week we get a preview of John Butters. He's the senior earnings insight analyst over there at FactSet of his blog that drops every Friday morning. You can have it in your inbox. But today we have Butters with us. Hello, John. Thank you for being here with us, bud.
Hey, Danny, Guy. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Coming from parts unknown, great state of Michigan.
You're not going to do it. You're not going to dox him here. All right, John, we just said this, that, you know, we're getting towards quarter end here. And it's interesting. And, you know, listen, I've been reading your blog for, like, it seems like ever, okay? And it's interesting how quickly, and Guy says this all the time, month is going like that, or the quarter is going like that. We spent a lot of time just about a month ago rehashing a lot of things that happened in Q4. And now that's just like ancient news. We got to get focused on what's happening. But sometimes it does make sense to kind of set the stage, at least for what happened. We still have, you know, a handful of S&P 500 companies that are still reporting here and there that covered a little bit of that Q4 sort of period or so. Talk to us a little bit about what your big takeaways were from Q4 2023 earnings, and then let's kind of set the stage for calendar 2024.
Yeah, exactly. So overall, you know, companies underperformed expectations, underperformed the average for expectations just a little bit. About 73% of companies beat the estimates, a little bit below the 10-year average of 74%. They beat by about 4.2%, again, a little bit below the 10-year average of 6.7. But net-net, we still finished with a higher growth rate overall for Q4 than the expectations coming into the quarter. So on December 31st, looking for 1.5% growth, we're going to finish with about 4.1% growth. And to be honest, it's a similar theme to what really we've been talking about for all of 2023. The top four sectors reported double-digit growth. Four sectors reported double-digit declines. The leaders were communication services, again, led by Meta Platforms, consumer discretionary, led by Amazon and the travel stock companies. Information technology, led by NVIDIA, and utilities were also in there for double-digit growth. And on the flip side, weakness in energy and materials, again, on the commodity side, and then weakness in healthcare and financials as well. And a lot of that weakness was really due to some sort of one-time events. So sort of similar trends to what we've seen the last couple quarters. And really, we're seeing somewhat of a similar setup coming into Q1 as well.
Let's take a look at the next slide. This is a slide that fascinates me. So as you mentioned, NVIDIA, Amazon, and Facebook were the largest contributor earnings growth for the fourth quarter. Makes sense. But what's fascinating, John, is that you have, again, on one side of the equation, you have four sectors leading the way. The flip side, you have four sectors obviously going the wrong way. And then you have sort of that muddling in the middle, which is getting us nowhere. And, you know, you can look at the market a number of different ways and say, we say all the time, it's seemingly getting dragged up by a handful of names. But I think to a certain extent, you know, your work sort of supports that in a little bit.
Yeah, well, we had talked about earlier in the earnings season, I think we highlighted this chart where, you know, six of the Magnificent Seven, taking Tesla out of the mix, were really the drivers of growth for Q4. In this chart, we wanted to narrow it down even more to really the top three companies, and the top three drivers were NVIDIA, Meta, and Amazon. And clearly, you can see here, obviously, those companies, 400%+ growth, take them out. The other 497 were expecting, it would have reported a loss of 2%. And a similar trend is setting up for the next quarter. Again, those companies are looking for about 200% growth, those three, Amazon, Meta, and NVIDIA. Again, take those three out. You're looking for a decline of 1%. But I think what's interesting here is the outlook for 2024. Again, those companies are going to still see tremendous growth, about 60%. But really, growth is expected to broaden out among the other among the other sectors and other companies. Take those three companies out, you're now looking for about 8.5% growth. So I think the key takeaway here is while those companies are still going to be drivers of growth, as we progress through the year, there's an expectation that earnings growth will broaden to other sectors and other companies as well.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, John, and we spend a lot of time on Market Call and on CNBC's Fast Money talking about, as our friend Carter Braxton Worth likes to call it, so the fundamentals, right? And so, again, you know, one of the reasons why I think it's so important, you know, the work that you do, it's not just kind of talking about what happened, but it's relative to expectations, relative to the averages over that period of time. It puts some context around that sort of stuff. So when I see like this sort of chart right here, and I think of these three names and their contribution, right, to the S&P 500 expected earnings, I say to myself, what could go wrong? Right. And so, like, for me, I look at these three names and I'm saying, okay, these ones have like largely benefited from this secular shift, at least the way it's playing out in public markets right now, of this move into AI. Everyone wants NVIDIA's GPUs. Meta has harnessed this technology to get better monetization on their ads, right? And Amazon is using AWS and plugging in a bunch of these AI applications and getting a lot of demand, right, for their cloud, for companies that are looking to do that. And that's great. And assuming that this is going to be like a stair step function higher, right? But expectations to me have gotten kind of high right now. So that's one of the things why we love tracking this data. We love thinking about the fundamentals on a real term basis and just thinking about how this might actually play out in a positive sort of sentiment, and these three leaders are going to continue to lead, or how they could disappoint. And if you're expecting a broadening out of some of the smaller names, how that might not happen too. So I just find that really interesting. And I, you know, we appreciate that sort of sentiment. Let's think about 2024 now. You just mentioned, you know, you take these three out, 8.5% expected growth. I think that number's come down a little bit. I think a few months ago, weren't we thinking about 10, 11% was kind of the consensus for S&P 500 earnings growth year over year?
Yeah, and what's interesting here in this chart will kind of show that we're still at 11% growth expected today. So again, take those three companies out, you drop down to 8.5%. But overall for the S&P 500, we're looking for 11% growth. And what's interesting in this chart, you can see sort of how the earnings season progressed. Expectations for 2024 started to come down during the month of January. And then right around the end of January, when all those big tech companies reported, expectations shot back up again. And that spike you see there, a lot of that, again, we talked about these same three companies, although NVIDIA reported later, but it was Amazon, Meta, Microsoft also contributed to that. And then that next spike you see a little bit later in February after NVIDIA reported, that drove up earnings again. So the point here, you know, while earnings growth is expected to broaden out, analysts are still very optimistic on these three companies because they are, again, the main drivers of this increase you're seeing in the 2024 EPS. So we started or coming in, you know, at the beginning of the earnings season, we're looking for about $244 per share. That dipped down to about $242. And now we're basically back to that $244 we were expecting coming into earnings season. So again, 11% growth on December 31st. We're still at 11% growth today. So again, basically when it's all said and done, not much change in the expected growth for the overall for the S&P 500.
It's so much better when John comes on and explains his work than when we get it and we try to explain it, because he's smarter than I am.
You know, he's got an open mic here on the market.
No, he knows this. So, John, so you know this, right?
Yeah, he knows that.
It's like, is that what they call it? Open mic? Well, like I just sort of,
I mean, it's like kind of
open invitation, mic. Right? Yeah.
You know, you got an open invitation. Listen, John, really appreciate you stopping in and giving us the 411. Pretty soon we'll probably have you back on whenever you're ready to do a kind of Q1 earnings preview or so, kind of slice and dice these numbers a little bit more. But you guys, listen, we appreciate it. You know where to find John Butters. He's the senior earnings insight analyst over there at FactSet. You can have that delivered directly to your inbox every Friday morning. John, thanks so much for being here, bud.
Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Appreciate it.
John's the man. And we will be at their conference,
FactSet,
at the end of April
2024
into early May.
Yeah.
We're getting there on a Monday evening.
Yeah.
And we're leaving on a Thursday morning.
We're going to be doing market call from there. We're going to be doing something kind of new. We're going to be doing a breakfast market kind of little.
I hope they have croissants.
Croissants?
Yeah, really? I like croissants.
I know you do.
Buttered croissants.
Nothing like an empty carb for Guy Adami. All right, guys.
What do you even know what that means?
I don't know. We got two things before we get out of here we want to hit a little bit. So this was the thing that you teased this morning on our Insta story. I know you're blowing up on the Insta here.
Not really.
OAH, this is a name or an index, an ETF that tracks the oil service names. Three names make up, 40% of that. But look at that little uptrend that it's been in, a little double bottom down there. You've been talking about how it broke that well-defined downtrend that had been in place for 9 months or so. Here we are. This thing is just like kind of like steadily grinding higher above that 200-day moving average, which is kind of ticking up a little bit, guys.
It's been very disappointing until obviously the last, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 months. And then you have a series, and you can see it right there, of higher highs and higher lows. It's very encouraging. Obviously traded up through the moving average, which is not a big deal. I mean, we've seen that before. Sometimes it can be a bit of a fake out. What you're starting to see is the potential for that moving average to start to slope higher, which is a good thing. I'm glad you mentioned the fact that we broke through to the upside this downtrend line that's been in place, basically, I want to say, since early fall or thereabouts. That's very encouraging. And as we're sitting here, you have this stealth rally in the underlying commodity in the form of crude oil and, oh, by the way, gasoline. The drawdown in gasoline was pretty significant, which is why you're seeing these refiners that we talk about all the time, specifically Valero, making all-time highs. So, look, there's a lot of reasons to continue to like the energy trade. I do. I know that it's been painful. I know that there have been better places to be. I get all of that. But I think people are going to start to wake up to the fact that actually energy makes a lot of sense here.
Yeah. Again, I mean, that and the XLE, I know you've been positioned bullishly. I've been doing it via options, and it's been a slow grind higher for both of them of late. And you've also, again, I know that in the low 70s, you were thinking crude could have a move back up towards 80. And, look at that. You called it stealthy. It is sticking around there. It's just above 80. It's kind of breaking out. Maybe they can pull up the crude chart really quickly. And, when we have a market down the way it is today on the PPI, and it should have been down on that CPI the other day, but when you see crude oil starting to pick up its head a little bit above its moving average after that consolidation, you have to wonder, a little bit, which leads us to yield really quickly here, Guy, because, I kind of got this one wrong earlier in the week. I thought we were going to see yields press a little bit lower. I thought we broke that kind of down, that moving average.
I hear you.
We're going to go and retest, and I was playing it via the TLT. That did not work out particularly well. I'm taking that off, cutting my losses there. But look at that, Guy. I mean, if we were to get back towards that kind of 435 level, we're at 430 right now. That's a quick move in a couple of days, and it's doing what you would have expected it to do on that inflation data.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. And what was interesting yesterday is, and we talked about it, you had what Rick Santelli deemed an A plus, or at least an A grade,
was coming out
A grade market for the 30-year auction. Yep. And then the knee-jerk reaction was actually the TLT rally. But if you look at it the remainder of the day, it actually spent the rest of the day sort of selling off, which I thought was something to sort of bookmark. And then obviously today you're seeing this move in yields. I'll say again, yields are going higher. They're not going higher because the economy is doing, they're going higher for what I deem to be wrong reasons. And again, you had a good bond auction yesterday. Maybe that's a one-off. I don't know. But I think that will add to the upward pressure in yields. And the market is not positioned for yields going higher. So a lot of people will say, the Fed's going to cut rates. The Fed can cut Fed could cut rates right now. It doesn't mean the 10-year yields are going down. Yeah. I mean, they can control the front end of the curve, as we've talked about. But this is telling you something. And to me, it's telling you that we still have a bit of an inflation problem. But I'm not saying I'm right. Yeah. That's just how I interpret it.
I mean, you've been saying it. It seems kind of clear. And again, we had, you know, you talk about this a lot, is the cumulative nature of that inflation, I think, over the last few years is something like 30% or so.
You want to know why people are pissed off? Now we're getting on a bit of a tangent, but that's why they are, because they'll watch on television and they hear people say inflation is coming down. And they're like, what the hell are you looking at?
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, yeah, it's just a math game. I mean, it's folks like us. I mean, this is what drives, you know, different risk assets in the markets. It's expectations and where numbers are. It's not too different than when we were just talking about Butters. All right, last thing before we get out of here, because this is obviously very related to rates. This is Lennar. And, you know, they reported, and the gross margin was disappointing. There's a couple headlines, Guy, that kind of stuck out to me a little bit. I mean, this is a big move for a stock like this. You know, it's had that nice consolidation after that huge ramp. Look at that ramp. I mean, that ramp, you know, in the fall coincided with the 10-year rates, yield 100%. Going from 5% down to 3.8%. And then we've been consolidating as rate cuts have been pushed out a little bit, just making new all-time highs to come off that kind of hard off of, you know, a gross margin miss. But this was a headline, you know, out of the conference call that caught my eye, Guy. Mortgage customers coming in with more credit card debt. This is something that you've been talking about at a time where if you have revolving debt, it is at highs that you have not seen, you know, in a very long time as far as yields are concerned. And so I just think that's kind of interesting. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to take out of here, out of the consumer. But if you were invested in home builders for the hope that, you know, yields were going to come down because the Fed was going to start to cut because they could, I don't know if that's the case here. And to me, I don't think that this is kind of reset in the way it should.
You know, we talked about yesterday, we mentioned Dollar Tree, right? Yeah. And we said that's one side of the consumer equation. The flip side we mentioned yesterday was Williams Sonoma. So on the one end, you have a stock getting obliterated on one end of the spectrum. The flip side, the stock was making new all-time highs in a parabolic move. And one thing I said last night on Fast Money, I'll say it here if you didn't see it. Lennar, the average price of their home dipped down to $420,000. So that home builder is sort of, you know, you deem it what you want, but their prices went lower. The flip side of that coin is Toll Brothers, who reported a couple weeks ago, their average price for the first time or second time ticked north of $1 million. And that's speaking to, again, all the things we talk about, this barbell of consumer. On one end, people are doing unbelievably well. And on the flip side of the coin, people are really feeling the pain. And you see it when you start hearing the commentary out of some of these home builders as well. So, listen, there's a lot to be concerned about. There's a lot to be optimistic about. But when you're starting to see moves like this, you definitely have to peek your head up. And again, all against the backdrop of yields, which I still think go higher from here.
All right. We covered a lot of ground here, Guy. We looked at the NASDAQ 100 through the QQQ. We traded it in the options. We had Carter Braxton Worth helping us navigate the Adobe earnings and obviously some of the other tech stuff going on. And the man, the myth, the legend, John Butters was here, earnings insight analyst over there at FactSet. That would be the senior earnings insight.
We outlined a trade. We'll put that out. I mean, there's a lot.
By the way, so we're putting expanded show notes, okay, for especially every episode where we are detailing trade ideas. You can look at some of the inputs that we're using and the way we're kind of mapping them out here. So go to riskreversal.com and you can sign up to get those show notes in your inbox.
Doesn't cost anything.
No, it doesn't. It's free. Look at that. Look at that.
Trade ideas in your inbox.
There you go.
Sign up today. See the way I did today? Because there's an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Riskreversal.com.
All right, let's do it, buddy. That was fun.
Rangers play tonight. Listen, this Garrett Cole stuff is freaking me out.
For your Yankees.
He's in California now. You know, I'm not optimistic. They say 1 or 2 months. I don't know. I think maybe right after the All-Star break. That's just me. I hope I'm wrong.
Yep.
I just hope I'm wrong, just so you know. So that's freaking me out. The Giants are a better football team today, as I said, than they were 3 days ago. They let Saquon go. You know what? The Eagles, good luck. I wish the man no ill will. Xavier McKinney, who I like. You know what? Safety doesn't seem to be a premium position anymore. A lot of teams let their safeties go. Mm-hmm. You know this.
Yep.
And Amanda knows this as well. They got a stud D-end, outside linebacker. This kid Burns from Carolina, who's a freak. So you understand. The Rams offered two number one picks and a number two to get this guy a couple years ago. They didn't do it. Giants got him for a 2 and a 5.
Yeah.
That's highway robbery. And then they signed him for 5 years. You don't care about any of this.
No.
They signed John Runyon's son to play guard. Kid's a, he's a road grinder. I love him. And they got the tackle from the Raiders, who's going to be at right tackle. So your offensive line is this tackle from the Raiders, who I can't pronounce his name. You're going to move Evan Neal to guard. John Michael Schmitz is your center. Dan's not looking at me. Runyon Jr. is your guard. And then Andrew Thomas. That has the makings of a very stout offensive line.
Yeah, for your guy.
Okay, nobody cares. Well,
your guy, Daniel Jones, is going to need a lot of help there. All right, guys, let's do it. That was a lot of fun. Guy,
I had fun.
Tommy.
I love, you know, I love breaking down. I love breaking down the sports.
Boomer and Carden, whenever you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. Guy from Morristown, thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Thanks to Butters. Thanks to CBW. We'll see you all on Monday. Hey, be sure to catch On the Tape podcast. It drops tomorrow morning in your favorite podcast store. Danny Moses will be with us. We're going to have a great conversation with our fine co-host there. And then Guy and I talk to Caleb Silver from Investopedia.
He's always brings nuggets.
Yeah, he's got some good
stuff. And I already got the title for the show.
All right, check it out, people. Thanks so much.